This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the next big thing in anti-inflammatory supplements, a brand new all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. Black for Health supports your liver, skin, cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight management, circulation, and immunity. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuture, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's Thanksgiving week, and here we are once again. We're convening to answer your questions. I'm with Layla Mutin, who is our nutritionist in residence. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. And how you doing, Layla? Good gearing up for Thanksgiving?
Yeah. In fact, I just got through cleaning the house before I sat down for this podcast.
Okay. That's very constructive.
So I'm like Energizer Bunny all morning.
Okay. And so what are you going to have? You have three dozen relatives? You're going to like...
No. Just, you know, who's home? It'll be my husband and my mother. Okay. And I'm not making turkey because none of us really like turkey. So I've got a nice leg of lamb.
All right. Well, that's so festive. But it's a little, that's more of an Easter thing, though, isn't it? Or ham, you know, things like that. Yeah.
I don't know.
Leg of lamb, you know, whatever. The Paschal lamb, you know, the traditional, you know, it's a bit of an Easter thing. All right. You're going to like switch it around a little bit. And this is certainly an atypical Thanksgiving across the country where lots of people are sequestered, locked down, limited in terms of the number of people who are going to be allowed to show up. Allowed to show up, right. You know, there's some states where they claim, I think in Oregon.
Oregon is terrible.
Yeah, Oregon, you actually are being encouraged to rat out your neighbors. You know, if your neighbors look like they're having a gathering of more than six people, you're supposed to call the cops. And and you know, so the governor was interviewed on TV, and the governor said, well, you know, it's kind of like the same thing as if there's somebody's having a noisy party down the street, so you call the cops under those circumstances. But I got to say that is a kind of a faulty analogy, because
totally
you know, it's like
enter George Orwell's 1984.
Yeah, I mean, because we have people, you know, if somebody has a raucous party at 2 a.m. and, you know, they're smashing beer bottles on the driveway or something, yeah, you know, you're entitled to call the cops because it is a neighborhood disturbance. But how is it a disturbance if people congregate with, say, 12 or 15 people in the privacy of their own home adjacent to you? I don't know. It's a little bit I don't know. So it sounds vaguely East German.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, terrible. But you know what? Have you ever heard the phrase snitchers get stitches?
Right.
First heard that on The Wire. There was a series called The Wire on HBO.
Yeah.
And that's where I first heard it.
Yeah.
Because it was a gang thing. You know, you don't snitch. Otherwise, you know, you get stitches.
Anyway, it's a divided country between people who are opposed to the lockdown and people who sort of dutifully accede to the lockdown. Look, there's no question that it is problematic. And I think we have a couple of questions today that relate to how to stay safe this Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll get to those momentarily. But much fewer people are traveling, although people are traveling. And, you know, it's going to put a damper on festivities. But, you know, it'll be all the sweeter
next year and in years hence, when we celebrate normal Thanksgivings, I think this too shall come to pass.
Yes.
So before we get to questions, by the way, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. And so, you know, this Thanksgiving, while you're a little more time on your hands, maybe you can formulate a couple of questions for us to tackle next week. This item, I you know, comes under the heading of "I told you so," or been saying, when it comes to glyphosate. Okay, there's a new study out of Finland, which the headline of which is "Glyphosate may affect human gut microbiota." Okay, so we know that glyphosate in large amounts can be harmful, can cause cancer, and certain types of lymphoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Now, you know, if you turn on the TV, you see, you know, they're trolling for people to join a class action lawsuit to get a settlement from Bayer, the company that, unfortunately for them, bought Monsanto at the very wrong time, and they inherited.
Oh my goodness, I remember.
Like $1 billion liability, because some people, especially people like landscapers, perhaps farmers, have come down with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it's thought that that's due to massive cumulative exposure of glyphosate. Well, okay, you know, there's no question that that is a real issue, but a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm not a farmer. You know, I spray my, my driveway with glyphosate. I used to do that. I used to use Roundup on my driveway because my driveway is a gravel driveway. And then all these, unsightly weeds would pop up, and instead of, manually extracting them, I would just happily spray Roundup. You know, this is like 15 years ago before I really realized the hazards of this. But, I was careful to wash my hands, so just don't, take it inside, take my shoes off, all that stuff. But it turns out that the hazards of glyphosate may be much more nuanced and subtle, is that we now know that there's a high amount of glyphosate in the environment. It's in our foods. You can find it in, when we do urine samples on the vast majority of people, there's a little bit of glyphosate. There's even glyphosate in present in breast milk. And it's in the soil. It's throughout the environment. And so kind of interesting thing is, when they safety tested glyphosate, they said it's really great because it just kills weeds and it has no, and they tested this out, it has no harmful effects on mammalian cells. Okay. Well, the research probably was not adequate because we now know that it can cause cancer in high amounts.
Yeah.
But what it does is, you remember this thing from biochemistry called the shikimate pathway.
Ooh. That's,
glyphosate targets an enzyme in the shikimate pathway. And the shikimate pathway is not present in mammalian cells. It's present in plants. And it's present in fungi. But it's also present in bacteria. So if we eat foods that have glyphosate residue, they go into our gastrointestinal tract, they affect the bacteria in our gastrointestinal tract, and they may alter the microbiome, which is a really big deal, right?
Yeah. Well, there was an older study about why are so many people coming down with gluten intolerance? Why are more people coming down with celiac disease? But aside from celiac disease, with the gluten intolerance, it could be the glyphosate.
Yes.
That's exacerbating.
Yes.
All of that.
Because it changes the microbiome. It creates dysbiosis. That can alter the immunological functioning of cells that depend on a healthy bacterial population in the gut. And so the other implication is that we feed a lot of crops that are sprayed with glyphosate to animals. We're changing the microbiome in the animals. And you know, this can certainly affect animal health.
Right.
You know, the crops in question are soy, corn, and canola, which are often grown as glyphosate-resistant varieties.
Yes.
The Roundup-resistant. GMO
versions.
Mm-hmm. So
they're sprayed profusely with glyphosate because they're GMO. They can withstand it. All the worse.
And it's also used as a desiccant.
The animal eats.
It's used as a desiccant because it helps to prevent fungus from growing. You know, when we store grain, one of the big problems is mold and fungus. So they just liberally spray glyphosate, even after they've harvested it, on certain grains. And so there's glyphosate residue on a lot of things.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Also on potatoes. They've been using glyphosate as desiccant on potatoes for a couple of decades now, at least.
That sounds like wisdom that you've accumulated from living on the North Fork of Long Island.
Yeah. Because
that's where the...
Well, all those potato farms are now wineries, but that's a different story.
Exactly. Exactly. And they're turning them into, you know, real estate developments, you know.
Right.
This is like really one of those unforeseen consequences. You know, it's not nice to fiddle with Mother Nature. And, you know, they just didn't think it through. They just didn't think it through before unleashing what I think is an ecological and health disaster.
Totally. Totally. Yes.
So
for anybody buying commercial produce like potatoes and eating, you know, gluten-free, even the gluten-free grains are, you know, glyphosate is being used there unless you're buying organic.
Yeah.
Honestly. And, you know, we need to reframe weeds. Weeds are pretty.
Yes.
God created them. They're beautiful flowers, wildflowers are called weeds, but they're beautiful. Okay, maybe Dr. Hoffman, you don't like it through the cracks in your driveway. I get that.
Right.
I totally get that. And, you know, when we grew our vegetables this past summer out east, we pulled the weeds by hand because they would flourish around, you know, around the tomatoes and around the radishes and the zucchini and all that. But you got to pull them. Yeah. You just pull them. That's
good,
what we did.
Good exercise, good stretching, you know.
Yep.
Yes, it's more fun to take the Roundup sprayer and walk around and spritz. That is fun. It is fun, you know. But don't go there. Don't go there. I mean, it's really – Europe has really taken some measures to limit the use of glyphosate. You know, I think we should follow suit.
I believe certain parts of India, maybe a smaller part of India, where they're simply not growing GMO.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, we need to learn from those lessons.
Better living through chemistry, they say.
Yeah. Oh, my. You remember that, huh?
Yeah. That's the old motto as we were growing up.
Right. DuPont.
Okay. Yeah. DuPont.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com, the destination for questions. Let's hear what our listeners are thinking about this week.
Yeah, this is really interesting. This is from James. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I've been working out more or less on rather than off. In the 50s and 60s, before the advent of steroids, one of the go-to sports performance aids was desiccated liver. And now some weightlifters took as many as 100 pills a day. The story behind it was a rat study.
Yeah.
And they found that the rats who were fed a normal diet with some supplements, desiccated liver, it took longer for them to drown, or they were still swimming, which is very interesting. Well, James knows, Dr. Hoffman, that you're into biking and running and all that. And had you ever tried desiccated liver?
That's kind of old school, you know.
That is
something that I think was popular in the 60s. And the reason that, I mean, liver is beneficial because it's got a lot of B vitamins in it. It's got plenty of B12. It does have iron. So those things, if you're a vegan, you know, you may have these things in limited quantities. And therefore, that might be beneficial. But there's no unique properties, in my opinion, of desiccated liver that are what are called ergogenic, which can either enhance athletic performance, endurance, speed recovery. I tell you what I'm doing. First of all, this year, because the gyms are closed, I'm doing a lot more outdoor exercise. As I may have shared with listeners, I bought a bike for when I'm in New Jersey. I'm kind of like a guy who collects, Ferraris and Maseratis, but instead, take one decimal point off or two decimal points off, and it's bicycles. Now I have three really premium bicycles. I keep two in one location on Long Island, and I keep another in New Jersey. And I don't ride in the city anymore because that's where I broke my hip.
Not a great idea.
So I've been out on the roads, and it's getting kind of cold, but I got a really good kit, which is layering, which enables me. Like this morning, it was about 35 degrees, and I was out on the roads here in New Jersey, and there's a lot of hills, and the wind was blowing from the northeast. But I think it's part of the advantage of not exercising inside is that you get cold exposure, and I think cold exposure does some really nice things for insulin resistance and resilience.
Brown fat.
I'm really working on my brown fat. So the things that I use, I mean, a lot of people use all kinds of things to get that performance edge. I take my usual vitamins, which is too numerous to recite here. Things I take specifically for athletic performance, I take the Berkeley Life nitric oxide before I work out. I also take nicotinamide riboside, which I think helps my mitochondria. I take NT factor, which are part of my regular vitamin supplement program, which is mitochondrial support. Coenzyme Q10, all that stuff. Plenty of magnesium. I actually put some in my drinking water. I put some magnesium, reacted magnesium powder.
That's got a lovely flavor too.
It is a lovely flavor, Part of it is hydration, but part of it is just to get like a little flavor hit, when you're, climbing a hill or something like that. You just want some kind of nice sensory input, nice flavor. And the other thing I'm doing is I'm drinking a lot of tart cherry juice for recovery. And in fact, I found some a big bag of frozen organic tart cherries at a market out here. And so that, I think, is speeding the resolution of my DOMS, which is an abbreviation for delayed onset muscle soreness, which limits your, you get up, after exercising and then next day and you say, man, I just don't feel like doing it. I'm not really sore. Well, I think that the DOMS is alleviated with some of the things. I take curcumin, obviously, too, glucosamine, chondroitin for my joints so that, I don't have a lot of joint soreness, and a lot of fish oil, which is anti-inflammatory, and God knows what else, it just scratches the surface. So do I take carnitine? No. There's some sketchy evidence that it helps athletic performance, but I don't take it.
Could help your mitochondria, but
creatine, which is, I think some bodybuilders and weightlifters use it, but I'm not doing such heavy weightlifting that it's going to make a difference.
You know what bothers me about creatine?
Yeah, go.
I see people's creatinine go up, and I'm very disturbed by that.
It can produce a scary blood test. So if you're taking creatine, stop for 48 hours before a blood test because it may falsely indicate that you have reduced kidney function.
Kidney disease.
Yeah.
Oh.
But that's spurious. It's not negatively affecting your kidneys. It's metabolite. Is creatine, which shows up, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're screwing up your kidneys.
Okay, good. All right. Okay. So, James, thank you for that thoughtful comment about desiccated liver. Wow. All right.
You remember Rosemary's Baby, you know, that scene where she was eating the raw liver? The raw liver.
When I saw that movie, I was a teenager, so I don't remember many details except being terrified.
Right.
Yeah.
But there used to be that, like, bodybuilders would take, like, raw egg yolks and raw liver, and they just put them in a blender, like, rawr, you know.
It's like, raw liver. Ew. Yeah. I don't know. The raw egg yolks, we've seen Rocky do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, right.
On the initial film. Right.
Right.
The first truck.
But here's the other thing. Liver, if you're going to eat liver, which is a perfectly fine thing to eat, I mean, Americans find it icky, but it's, you know, organ meats are really healthy for you.
Oh, yeah.
Just make sure it's organic, because the liver is the sort of detox organ of the body. And
yes.
In animals, it can bioaccumulate a lot of the environmental toxins. So try and get organic liver if ever you're going to do that.
Yes.
But cook it, cook it with onions and sprinkle some
and mushrooms.
Mushrooms and rosemary.
And if you really don't like liver, but you know you should eat it, really smother it in mushrooms and onions, you won't know it's there.
Yeah, put some port on there,
or
some red wine. Red wine reduction on that is nice too.
There you go.
Yeah.
Or have some pate with your red wine. Ah.
Ah. Now we're talking.
Now we're talking. Holiday spirit here.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. We've got an email from Jean. This is very interesting. It's about melatonin for COVID. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I just listened to your weekly Q&A and your discussion of COVID-19, and I thought I'd pass this item on the potential of melatonin for COVID. And what this is, I've got the link open here. Cleveland Clinic team draws a link between COVID-19 protection and the sleep aid melatonin.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, so what melatonin seems to do, I mean, first of all, it helps somewhat to induce sleep, more or less, because, you know, I wish I had a buck for everyone for whom melatonin doesn't work, but it can help.
Yeah.
And it helps to set your circadian rhythm, so there's some evidence that it helps with jet lag.
Yeah.
So it also...
They found in the study
yeah, go.
That the people who were taking melatonin were 28% less likely to test positives for SARS-CoV-2 after adjusting for other factors like age, sex, underlying disease. And this was in PLOS Biology.
Okay.
The journal PLOS. Yeah.
So, and mechanistically, it makes sense because melatonin also has anti-inflammatory properties. And it seems to work on the inflammasome, which is kind of a cool word, which it means the biochemical pathway by which viruses induce inflammation. So
yeah.
It seems to tame the inflammasome pathway. Now, you know, better minds than I can get into the weeds and give you all the specific details of how it impacts NF-kappa-B and all these different pathways that lead to inflammation that can lead to cytokine storm. But it is advisable, I think, for people to take melatonin if they're concerned with prevention. They may take, you know, it doesn't seem to require really those high doses. You know, for cancer patients, we often give 20.
Yes.
Where there's some evidence that in certain cancers like breast cancer and prostate cancer, there may be preventive benefits, you know, in terms of secondary prevention. You've got it already. I mean, I wouldn't just have everybody willy-nilly take 20. What's interesting about those high doses, by the way, is that they don't knock you out. You think, oh my goodness, you know, am I going to overdose on melatonin? I'm going to fall asleep at the wheel? No, it reaches a certain point where it helps sleep, and then beyond that, its other effects are anti-inflammatory or oncological, anti-cancer. But it turns out that as low as 2 to 5 milligrams of melatonin may confer protection, and it's
not just know. And that's the sleep dose, pretty much.
Yeah. So I mean, if someone is sick with COVID-19, I would recommend 5, maybe 10 as a way to ameliorate it. It's not going to be a surefire, you know, one size fits all panacea.
Yeah.
But it would be advisable, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's great. Cleveland Clinic.
So that's great.
Yeah.
Gene, thank you for sharing this article
great.
With us.
So Layla, we're coming to the end of our first segment. You know, we divide the podcast into two parts. Time flies when we're having fun, as we usually say here. So give us a preview of what we're going to tackle in part two.
Dr. Jason Fung, in an article, says that in a study, those who took an increased amount of vitamin B had an increase in cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So how much is too much?
Okay.
Yeah.
Great question. Let's tackle that question in part two. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. You too can have your question answered. If you send your question to radio program at AOL.com, we'll pick up on those questions next week. And so now on to part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mudin, our nutritionist in residence. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.